Hi, everybody. My name is Caro Campos. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a third year at UVA, and I am president of UndocUVA.
Hi, everyone. My name is Abraham Castillo. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm also a second year at UVA. And this year, I am serving as a co-researcher for UndocUVA.
Awesome. Thank you both for joining us on the show. I'd love you to tell us, what is UndocUVA? What do they do for the UVA community?
So UndocUVA is a student organization at the University of Virginia, which works to support and create spaces for undocumented DACA and all liminally documented students at the university. We also are intentional to work with other universities in Virginia and around the country, but also locally in the Charlottesville community, doing outreach both on the local level and with other groups on the state level, recognizing the privileges of being a student. We are not all undocumented or DACA students or liminally documented on the executive board. We have people who are formerly undocumented, who have family members who have been undocumented, or generally a lot of us have had experiences within the immigration system. But we are an organization who works to kind of create awareness, organize in communities and just create greater infrastructure of support.
I think Caro explained that beautifully. One thing I would like to add is a lot of the ways we do this, we often do like individual events centered on raising awareness. It could be like direct action or social media campaigns. We also do UndocU Ally trainings, which are basically trainings for students, for faculty, also like student workers, so we can just educate people on these issues who might not be so familiar with them. And we also do raise scholarships. That's another big thing. I know Caro is smiling right now because this year, like, we had amazing like success with our scholarship. So
thank you for bringing that up, Abraham. Along with what I said about building infrastructure, the university, as of June 16th of 2020, changed their policy to matriculate all students regardless of status. But with that, there is minimal amounts of support and resources and infrastructure. So thinking about, you know, the legacy of exclusion at the university, 2020 was the 50th anniversary of women being co-educated into the undergraduate schools. Also, you know, 50-year anniversary of integration, racial integration, and thinking about the legacy of the university matriculating marginalized students but not providing the resources for them to graduate and to thrive at the university. So, you know, it's 2021 and we're still experiencing the similar reoccurrence. So this past December, we fundraised $5,000 in 48 hours, which was just a crazy, exciting thing. So we have five $1,000 scholarships for students at UVA who are documented or undocumented or liminally documented. And we're currently figuring out ways to fundraise for scholarships that will be able to provide for incoming students, but also for members of the community in Charlottesville and in Virginia who are undocumented or impacted by the immigration system.
Thank you. You classified the differences between documented, undocumented, and liminally documented. Could you describe what those tiers are and what they look like?
So there are many categories. A term that we coined last year is UndocuPlus, which kind of encapsulates all different statuses. For example, a person who is undocumented, a person who has DACA status. DACA status is a temporary status. You have to reapply for it. DACA means Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program put in place in 2012 that allows access to education, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it is deferred action. It is not a pathway to citizenship. It is a very expensive program to get into. So, thinking about how we really changed our name in April of 2020 from Dreamers on Grounds to UndocuVA to push against the dreamer narrative and push against the idea that only those who are accessing higher education should be protected and should be able to access some form of status or some form of, you know, basic protection. So we generally use the term Undocu Plus. We try to center the term undocumented as well, and the experiences of those who are undocumented. TPS is temporary protected status. Again, a temporary protection from countries who are facing, you know, climate disasters, et cetera, et cetera. Undocu Plus also includes, you know, different statuses. You know, some people might have been applying, seeking asylum, you know, seeking refugee status, and then either it was too expensive, you know, immigration problems happened and they became undocumented. So, you know, the immigration system is clearly incredibly complicated, and oftentimes people just fall into the cracks and will ultimately become undocumented even if they had a status at some point in time. So ultimately, in conclusion, we try to center the term undocumented or Undocu Plus.
Thank you for explaining. So I'm curious to know, how did you all get involved? Was it before you came on campus? Was it after you came on campus?
This is actually like my first year being on executive board. I remember last year, I was really close with a lot of the seniors who were on the executive board, Johanna, Arlena, Nicole. You know, they were some of like, they were like my inspiration my first year. And I just remember formerly Dreamers on Grounds being, you know, like a powerhouse and, you know, just like an amazing community of individuals. So that's really what inspired me to join. So this is my first year, and I'm already blessed to have an amazing executive board like Caro, Juan, like all the other members who keep like pushing, like we all push ourselves to grow and to, you know, expand. So I'm really thankful for this experience.
Thank you, Abraham. I totally agree. So I'm a third year. I came in fall 2018, and that semester there were asylum seekers being released from detention centers in McAllen, Texas, after an order to release many hundreds of asylum seekers as new migrants were coming in, particularly from Central America. And in a span of like 3 days, 3 days originally, but it actually took about 3 weeks for a network of 28 cities from McAllen, Texas to Richmond, providing support for asylum seekers and organizing with those asylum seekers who were leading their own journeys to seek asylum. And that kind of brought me into a lot of the circles in Charlottesville who had been organizing against ICE and, you know, with undocumented and migrant communities. I had been doing some organizing in Richmond. I lived in Richmond for 3 years before coming to college. So was already, you know, kind of connected to circles there, but wanting to get engaged in the communities here in Charlottesville. So that experience, my first semester, kind of brought me into organizations like Plumas at UVA, Political Latinx is United for Movement and Action in Society, and what was then known as Dreamers on Grounds. I remember attending my first Undocu-Ally training. And then in my second year, which is when I came on to the executive board of Undocu-VA as an Undocu-Ally trainer, is when I really began like a commitment to the organization, and again felt an incredible sense of community and empowerment from all of the fourth years and the people who were in that organization.
So I'm curious to know more about how you all were involved in Delegate Guzman's recent bill, which expanded the eligibility of in-state tuition. And Caro, you mentioned that you were part of some nonprofits that were keeping close track of the bill. Could you describe that relationship?
Sure. So it's actually a working group that us as an organization are part of, which is originally was called the In-State Tuition Working Group, started at the beginning of 2020, which was working for the in-state tuition bill. So even before we were thinking about financial aid equity, you know, communities were thinking about giving in-state tuition to all students in Virginia, regardless of status. So last year, at the beginning of 2020, an in-state tuition working group, was founded with organizations such as what was then known as Rumors on Grounds, Undocu Mason from George Mason, Undocu Rams from VCU, NACASEC, a Korean American advocacy organization, VASIR, Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights, many other immigrant rights coalitions and working groups and education policy groups in Virginia, all part of this working group, kind of came together in 2020's legislative session to push for the in-state tuition bill. That bill passed, went through, and in July 1st of 2020, it became effective, which was, you know, an incredible win. But obviously, in-state tuition was just a start. So this past January, the working group again began meeting pretty consistently, working to kind of advocate for this financial aid equity bill. And it, you know, it's important to recognize that people have been advocating for these things for years and years and years, right? The in-state tuition bill in 2020 is something that undocumented students had been pushing for so long, going to Richmond and, you know, advocating and telling their stories and giving testimony. And the financial aid equity bill, I think, is just a really critical next step. We met with several delegates, several senators, to kind of, you know, we created a fact sheet, an importance of a fact sheet that gave kind of different statistics about why this bill was so important. And I mean, it's almost going to go through. I think it's like almost to the governor's desk. And we're really hopeful that this bill will go through to really focus on educational equity. I do want to give space for Abraham to speak because he gave an amazing testimony at one of the open sessions. So,
yeah, thank you. I myself am actually pretty fairly like new to this. Most of the work I do with UndocuVA is usually like behind the scenes, like research. But I did see Caro mention this opportunity, and I thought it was a really great bill that I wanted to see pass, and I figured, you know, I should use my voice, my time to, you know, just to leave a remark and so they understand like why this is so important.
Yeah, and could you share, Abraham, a little bit about what you said when you addressed the committee?
Yeah, so I focused my speech more specifically on the context of UVA because I know historically UVA has claimed to be, you know, the great and the good, even though in reality it really has gatekept a lot of students from attaining, and in particular students with liminal status. You know, the decision for undocumented students to have in-state tuition was like a great first step, but given that UVA in itself is already inaccessible financially, and with the added factor that tuition is increasing every year, you know, it's essential that undocumented students have access to these resources.
And could you both describe in more detail what does tuition equity look like? Like, is the institution going to have to become more financially accessible to its undocumented students and to its students with liminal status?
Yeah. So, originally when the university decided to change its policy to, matriculate all students regardless of status on June 16th of 2020, at that time, there was only the in-state tuition policy, but this obviously excludes students who are from out of state. And also thinking about Again, what we see with this bill, the importance of allowing all students, regardless of status, to access financial aid is just part of a mission to increase educational equity and educational access. Ultimately, like Abraham mentioned when he spoke to the House, is, you know, it's not asking for special treatment. It is literally asking for basic equity, basic equitable policies in terms of financial aid. You know, just reading some things off of the fact sheet, undocumented students and DACA students continue to not be eligible for federal financial aid, federal grants, federal work study, government-sponsored student loans. So, you know, just creating a basic infrastructure on the state level, if those policies are able to be made, is an incredible first step. So thinking about, you know, what the University of Virginia specifically can do, currently there is one individual who is serving as a point person for undocumented and DACA students. She's probably one of the most overworked people at UVA, one of the most incredible people at UVA, the Dean of Multicultural Student Services, also working with the Interfraternity and Sorority Councils. And, you know, this, again, legacy of overburdening people who are advocating for and working alongside marginalized students cannot continue to be a legacy if we are really wanting to be committed to equity at the university and in the community beyond. So what that can look like is hiring a undocumented student coordinator who will work to, you know, advocate for, advise, and really be in solidarity with all students, regardless of status, particularly those who are undocumented, documented, liminally documented. We see before, you know, DACA is a program that is consistently in jeopardy. December 5th of 2020, it was reinstated to its original form, but it is a temporary form of protection. It is deferred action. So thinking about the importance of creating that infrastructure of support at the university and beyond just, you know, temporary changes is really critical.
Yeah, so it sounds like this was just the first step in a long list of other things that you're advocating for. So so what's next for UndocuVA? Is what you just described advocating for a court? Sorry, let me pause. What was the title of the position that
undocumented student coordinator?
Student coordinator. Okay. So this sounds like this is the first in a list of steps that you're advocating for at the university. So what's next? Is it an undocumented student coordinator? Is it a dedicated student space? What's on the horizon?
One thing I can say that we are working towards right now is definitely expanding financial aid, because I know even though undocumented students are, or if they're eligible, they are able to receive in-state financial aid, there still is a lot of financial barriers. As Gato mentioned, work study is still a big issue. We're also trying to get more professors and more faculty involved. And we hope to do that by having more undocumented ally trainings throughout the semester. And as far as like big picture moves, I'm sure Gato can mention that.
Yeah, thank you, Abraham. I especially like your point about bringing in faculty to the conversation. We do have a faculty executive board, which is comprised of several faculty from around the university who actually created a syllabus language guide to implement language into syllabi that will show support and acknowledgement of all students regardless of status, and to really make professors aware of how they can show up for their students in ways that may not be clear at first hand. Beyond bringing in faculty, we are also looking into what it would look like to have a sanctuary campus. Obviously, people have been organizing for sanctuary campus for many years at the university and around the country. This is something that is going to be a project for several years. We really have to push beyond what people think is acceptable or what people think is plausible. Like I mentioned earlier, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it was not plausible. People would immediately say no to the idea of undocumented students being matriculated. People would immediately say no to the possibility of in-state tuition, to the possibility of in-state financial aid. And we're just seeing now in 2021 that these things are possible. So I think ultimately when we're thinking about our desire to organize, it is not only important to think about what can we think about that seems impossible now, because you know by 2030, you know I really hope and I really believe that support can increase. So not only that, but also the idea of longevity. You know, we're only here for 4 years, and there cannot be this cycle of students coming in 4 years and then the university forgets and tries to tuck everything under the rug. So we're actually working on a digital archive of our organization now so that our work can continue for years to come. And that people don't forget about all the work that's been happening. I would also like to emphasize that while there are 800,000 documented students, about 800,000, there are 11 million undocumented people in the US. So we cannot only center those who are accessing higher education. We cannot believe in the meritocracy, because the meritocracy will deny those 11 million people of their human rights to access to, you know, food, water, education, etc. You know, thinking about the thousands of people, children, elderly people, pregnant women, all kinds of people who are detained, not only at the border, but in migrant detention centers in Farmville, Virginia, in North Carolina, and all across the country. So these issues are not just isolated within the university. They cannot be isolated within the university. They're much larger than just the student body. And recognizing that is also fundamental to our organizing.
Right on. I love that. Would you mind defining what a sanctuary campus looks like? I asked this, and this isn't going to have to go into the interview, but it's important to define things as much as possible, because not all of our listeners are necessarily going to know immediately what you mean. But could you go into it a little more detail, and we'll just splice that back into the when you mention it first.
Definitely. Yeah. So a sanctuary campus would mean that students and workers as well would be protected from being targeted by ICE if they are on campus. So it would look like, you know, not allowing ICE officers on campus. This is also connected to general work of you know, removing police from student spaces and really trying to build different understandings of what safety and what community looks like beyond policing. I want to give a shout out to UVA Beyond Policing, who is doing a lot of this work as well. Also, you know, the Black Student Alliance, who has been engaging in this work for over 50 years. But yeah, sanctuary campus would really just entail, you know, if students are on campus, they would not feel at risk of deportation. This also, you know, connects to how students may be surveilled, you know, on online networks. But again, I return to what I was just saying earlier. The organizing for sanctuary campus is just one thing. And, you know, even if we are to get sanctuary campus in years to come, the community, the Charlottesville community, is still at risk. So this has to go beyond just the campus. And just to shout out a resource, there is a rapid response hotline that was created by several different nonprofits and organizations in Charlottesville, that if you do ever see a ICE vehicle or ICE officers around Charlottesville, you can call the number. I'm going to look up the number really quickly and then I can say it.
Definitely look that up. So one of the things that I think is really interesting that you've been talking about is how there is a way of advocating for change at the state level when it comes to expanding financial aid services. And there's a way of creating change within the administration. How, as a student, are you navigating the people in different kinds of positions of power? And how are you pressuring them to create the necessary change to meet the moment?
I think this is more of a you
question. Okay, I got it. Also, I found the number, so I'll read it off. The number for the rapid response hotline is 855-298-3271 or 855-AYUDAR-1. Another thing that I think is important is like the idea of language justice. A lot of the times resources that are put out are in English, but it's important to have them in Spanish, in other languages as well. You know, the undocumented community is not only Hispanic, but is from all around the world, you know, centering the experiences of Black migrants as well, Black Latinx migrants, Black non-Latinx migrants is also critical. To answer your question, though, so organizing within the university, I think, is complex because, you know, those who we think hold power aren't actually always the ones who are in power. So, for example, a lot of people see President Ryan as the kind of face of the university, the tip of the top of the power hierarchy, but ultimately there is also the Board of Visitors, and the Board of Visitors are actually often more times more powerful than President Ryan. You know, members of the Board of Visitors are you know, leading corporations in Virginia, you know, the CEO of Dominion, et cetera, et cetera. So thinking about how power is working within the university is really critical. At the beginning of the year, we run a disorientation along with BSA, Plumas, Living Wage Campaign, YDSA, to kind of break down for incoming first years how the systems of power work at the university and in the community. So that is really critical. You know, I think we've learned ultimately to not be afraid of just like cold emailing people and finding different ways to, you know, communicate with them. One thing I will say, sorry, I'm getting a call. One thing I will say is oftentimes we have to be really intentional. Like, you know, sometimes we have to not compromise, but sometimes we have to think like, where should my energy be going? Like, should my energy be going to advocating for something that I know the university at this point is not going to accept? What are other avenues that I can take? So like, you know, when the matriculation announcement came out, a lot of us were like, well, there's no financial resources. There's no financial resources, and the university was like, it's illegal, it's illegal, it's illegal, it's never going to happen. And now we're in January of 2021, and there's bills again now that are going to provide financial aid equity. Not only is that one way that we, you know, were realizing that the university was not going to necessarily show up for us in the way that we needed them to, but we also then created our own scholarship. So taking, you know, it under our responsibilities is one way of kind of acknowledging how power functions.
Awesome. I realized that I have a baby Zoom account and it's going to kick us out in 2 minutes. I thank you both so much for taking the time out of your busy student schedules to talk to me on a Sunday night. Is there anything else you'd like to add or want our listeners to know?
You can follow us on social media at UndocuVA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to keep up to date with the work that we're doing. We're going to continue fundraising for scholarships and ultimately just important to recognize the privileges of even being in higher education and recognizing that this problem is much bigger than just at the university. And one last thing, we cannot get stuck in the cycle of being like, oh, there aren't enough undocumented or DACA students, so the university can't provide resources. But then if there aren't the resources, then undocumented and DACA students aren't going to be here. So we have to recognize that the rate of resources has to increase higher than the rate of students are being here. So matriculation is as important as retention, and the fight continues.